Sokala Duma Radio.
He played 67 times for Bafana Bafana in the process, keeping South Africa's only clean sheet in 9 World Cup matches. He won the African Cup of Nations and the COSAFA Cup. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the big interview. In this episode, we go all World Cup with Andre Arensa. I'm now joined on the line by former Bafana Bafana goalkeeper. He's a record holder at some point in the PSL, but today we're speaking specifically about the World Cup. He's had his fair share of experiences, disappointments and exciting moments in the World Cup. Andre Arensa joins me, the goalkeeper coach currently at SuperSport United. Andre, thank you very much for joining us at Sokala Duma Radio. How's it going?
Thank you very much. No, it's all good my side, and just like everybody else, excited for what is about to happen coming shortly. And that's another World Cup on the biggest stage of world football.
And the temptation from my side is to flat out ask you, what do you think is going to win? But I'm going to withhold for now. We'll get there as to who you think is going to win. We'll get there at some point in the conversation. First things first, though. One of the experiences that you had with regards to a World Cup is an injury that you experienced prior to the 1998 World Cup, and you had to be replaced by a goalkeeper who then got injured, and he had to be replaced by another goalkeeper. Tell me about the disappointment of dealing with not going to a World Cup. And I ask that because another player, a star player, Leroy Sané, a lot of people have been talking about him. He's not going to the World Cup based on performance reasons. What does a player go through? What goes through a player's mind when they experience something like that?
Well, first and foremost, the World Cup without Leroy Sané is incredible. It's unheard of. When you look at the talent that this young man possesses, so maybe that's an indication of you know, even better talent than winning people's opinion is out there, which I would imagine would give an indication of how incredible this World Cup's going to be. So that's another story. You know, for whatever reason, and yes, I you're 100% correct. I went through a personal reason for missing out on the World Cup, but mine was slightly different. In a sense that I was selected for the 1998 World Cup by Philip Trudy at the time, who was the national team coach. And that brought with it, the excitement of potentially representing my country at the highest level of football. And that's what every footballer works towards. And so there was a sense of achievement in that alone. And the crazy thing about it was literally a day before the opening game against France when I busted me and had to have an operation. So at that very moment, for me, it was like, you know, total devastation. Like my whole world had come to an end. And this is what every footballer would go through if their dreams of playing at a World Cup is shattered for whatever reason. And so that's really hard to digest and come to terms with, because ultimately that's what you play every 4 years towards at your club. And so that's a disappointment in itself. For me, you know, I think every coach out there has his own reasons for choosing certain players for his squad and not choosing certain players for his squad. So it's a shame that we won't get to see a player like Leroy Sané on the world stage coming up now in Russia.
And speaking about injuries, the one that you suffered made you miss out on the 1998 World Cup. Now, as a precursor to this upcoming World Cup, a concern for England was Jack Wilshere. They don't have necessarily a playmaker, but in him they do have some sort of resemblance of a playmaker. But perhaps because of his injury record, he has not been selected by Gareth Southgate. Would you have taken him along even with his injury record? Would you have made the risk of centering your football around a person who can be injured within the first 5 minutes of the opening game?
No, I think that is something no coach at that level will want to take any chances on. And as good as a player he is, you know, I'm thinking Gareth Southgate is thinking, well, I'd rather have players that are more fit, who are more injury-free, if you like, and players that I could tend to count on. So he's always going to have in the back of his mind the fact that depending on how he wants to put out his team for any one given game in the World Cup. And if he's looking at Wilshere and he's going, what can he offer me in the game? And if he's got any doubts about that, then he's not going to choose him in any case. And so, you know, taking him with, in my opinion, it would definitely be a waste. When I look at what England has in terms of pace and structure going forward, especially, you're going to need players that can keep up with that. And in his state, he probably won't be able to physically keep up with that kind of pace of the game, and whatever may be required of him. Because I think that is going to be England's secret weapon, if you like. The counter-attacking side of their game. And so when they break down opposition and they win the ball, you know, have they got the pace to put defenders on the back foot? They have got that pace. And so if you as a player, individual player, can't keep up with that, then, you know, it's not going to be conducive for the manager to choose you. And also, if he does choose him, what message is Gareth Southgate sending to other players who are injury free and can play in that role?
Mm. Right. And then fast forward from 1998 to 2002, you become the number one for the nation, and you are entrusted with this duty of facing Paraguay, Slovenia, and Spain. Prior to the tournament, briefly talk to us about the preparations, the rigorous preparation for the tournament, the inter-personnel dynamics within the team, from bonuses, from rivalries. How was the whole experience of 2002 Korea and Japan?
Yeah, I mean, I'll try quickly put that in a nutshell for you and give you an indication of what these players and the teams will go through in their preparation route towards the World Cup as well. And I think in 2002 we had very, very good preparation. We set ourselves on the route to Japan, Korea via a stop-off in Hong Kong.
Yes. Remember the tournament.
The sort of tournament we played there, and with Scotland in there, Turkey were in there, I think the Hong Kong 11 and ourselves. And en route to the final, we did ever so well. In fact, I remember it clearly because it was my 50th cap playing in that final against Turkey at the time. And we literally did, and I kid you not, we literally overran them in many aspects of the game. And we went on to win the game 2-0. And you've got to remember that particular World Cup in Japan, Korea in 2002, Turkey finished third in the tournament, at that particular time. So we prided ourselves on our preparation, which was fantastic, going through that, and of course, en route to the World Cup. So the World Cup for me, personally, was a mixed bag, and I say that because, you know, I remember it clearly, and to this day, I mean, there's not a lot of people who forget it. In fact, I get reminded from time to time. Of my injury in that particular World Cup, and of course, notably against Spain. But it started off fairly okay for us. We managed to get a 2-2 draw against Paraguay. You know, which was an okay start to any tournament. And then, you know, the cherry on the top for us was beating Slovenia in the next game 1-0. You know, I was very happy to I think it was our first clean sheet in the World Cup final that we were able to keep as a nation. So that was fantastic, and it really set us on that path.
And it's actually to date, the only clean sheet, if I think about it, it's actually to date
the only clean sheet
that we've had in World Cup, in three World Cups.
But I wasn't even paying attention to it, but that's new to me. So if you think about it, that is correct. But, you know, as satisfying as that was for me, it also had its negative spin off in that game against Spain, because we came up firstly against top quality opposition in that Spanish team. And the goal that I conceded against Raul, you know, it's one that haunted me for a long time, because it had its negative failures attached to it, one that I had to deal with on a personal level for many, many years. You know, and that for me was a life lesson in the game, in terms of going through bad patches and how you come back from that sort of thing. You know, and my challenge coming back from that particular incident at the World Cup was, funny enough, I think it was about a month later or so, or 2 months later, upon returning from the World Cup, and I captained Bafana Bafana to go on to win the COSAFA Cup at that time. So that was a huge sort of test for me, character-wise and that sort of thing. And you'll find a lot of players will go through those very same sort of paths and moments in their careers where it's also testing for them. And that's important to understand.
Mm. Now, talk about the reason why I bring this up is because FIFA has done something that they've not done before. It's unprecedented that they've brought forward the fee, the World Cup fee for the CAF nations, meaning that they are paying them in advance so as to avoid these payment scandals that always surround the World Cup regarding specifically African nations. Talk to us about the money problems or the efficiency in which money was dealt with in your time, and what you think about what CAF has done this time around.
It depends on what the money is meant for, if there's specific relation to where it's supposed to go, if it's just for that sort of thing, it's for players and that sort of thing. But when it comes to the money aspect of it, and it's a shame that, look, I've got to be honest with you. During my time, we have had issues from an association perspective where there've been money sort of complaints, if you like, or issues to deal with and work through. The good thing about it is, during my time, that there've never been massive critical concerned where it has actually completely taken focus away from the players in what they had to do and the job at hand in terms of representing the country. So we were very fortunate that it's never come to that. I don't know how hectic it has got post my playing Bafana Bafana career, but I suppose it's for those players to tell their own story. But I think that if it's not looking at, and we've seen this before, I think Nigeria is an African nation that comes to mind that has had major issues with their association with money, etc., and that sort of thing. And other nations as well. It's not good. It's not conducive to the fact that these players have to keep complete focus. And when you're playing at this level of the game, and you're representing at this level of the game, it demands nothing but your complete focus. So going into a World Cup tournament, for example, you would want these issues to be finalized and put to bed way in advance before going to that particular stage. So I think, depending on what the money is for, I think this is a very good initiative from those associations. And I think it can only be, from a focus perspective, it can only be a massive help to the players specifically.
And this ties in, my question about finances ties into the next one, which is about finally Africa being able to progress to the semifinals and perhaps the finals and perhaps the winning of the World Cup. I know that scientifically and the research that's been done is that it's always going to be very difficult for any country with financial problems, with political instability, to find itself winning a World Cup. And most of our countries on the continent are experiencing that, the lack of nutrition for players and so on and so forth. So what would it take? Is this going to help us get closer to getting to the goal of winning a World Cup, or at least a semi-final?
Yeah, I think you spot on, because, you know, the past has proven that political instability and various association instability are always going to have negative spin-offs from an African perspective. And I think that even though Ghana, I think it was, got us closest to a World Cup semi-final against Uruguay, they've proven to us that it's not far away for an African side. It's not. And so for the only way that an African team is going to progress to a semi-final or perhaps the final of a World Cup is through pure skill, ability, and just complete focus. Because when I look at African players starting to go and ply their trade in your elite leagues of Europe and elsewhere in the world, they are setting a benchmark in terms of competing very, very close, and it's getting closer by the season. And it's a, it's just going to be the African side who is the most well-rounded. Now, if we talk about African teams out there, in this particular World Cup, Egypt, of course, Senegal, you know, those are top teams, Tunisia also, top teams. You have to maybe look at who's the most well-rounded. Now, you can say Egypt, for example, and everybody talks about Mo Salah. That's one player. The other teams also, those are just one or two individual players. The most well-rounded for me has to be the Senegalese team at the moment. I say that because we came up against them in our qualifying campaign, and they were so difficult to knock over. They really were, from defense all the way through to the attacking force, which Sadio Mane has led very, very well for them. They are a threat. There's no doubt about it. They are a threat. And if I were to pick one, I really, based on that, would have to say Senegal, most likely in my book, will get Africa to the furthest part of this World Cup.
Mm-hmm. And as we conclude the conversation, final two questions for me. One is on the racism part. Let's deal with that. Are you concerned that perhaps there would be racism incidents? I mean, we know that a lot of African players have had this experience of being racially abused in Europe, and Russia as well has a very bad track record when it comes to that. So are you concerned that that is going to portray itself at the world stage with billions of people watching?
You know, I got to say, I'm not too concerned, even though when you look at Russia as a host nation, and yes, there've been many African players who've come away with their own racism stories from Russia and from that whole side of the game. And the reason I say that, of course, it could. Raise its ugly head, and we don't want to see it, but there's definitely, you know, a chance that that may happen, because we as individuals or as associations, we don't have any control of the minority when they come and support the game or whatever they come to support the game for. But what I can say is, and I say this because over the 2010 World Cup, I was lucky enough to work fairly closely with FIFA and delegations from FIFA when they were here in South Africa. And I can tell you that FIFA, as a governing body, does not take lightly to that sort of approach, in a tournament that is headed by their name. And they're very, very big on that. FIFA will go to the extreme to wrap out any of those issues, and I don't see this as being any different. In fact, I would go as far as to say that FIFA already addressed these issues that potentially could rear its head, and they've cut it already. And so that's why I'm not too concerned, I've got to be honest, about any of these ugly things raising its head during the World Cup.
Mm, all right, and then your pick for the World Cup to win or perhaps to do well, the team that you affiliate yourself the most with, which one do you pick?
So if this is anything to go by, let me just give you the stats. In my analyst career, if you want to call it that, I've probably made about 10,000 predictions. I think I've got one right. So there you go. Who's going to believe me?
That's not a good track record.
Let me tell you this, though. You've got to look at your top achievers going into this World Cup. And you've got to look at world rankings, of course. And the likes of Brazil, even Argentina, you've also got to look at Germany. Those teams, I think, you know, those are your front runners. Those are the ones you expect to be there or thereabouts come the end of the tournament. I have a dark horse to start off with, and that's got to be Belgium. I've looked at this Belgium side, man for man, player for player. You know, in Martinez, they've got a coach who I think can take them to places they've never been before. So that's definitely my dark horse. I think I'm correct in saying that Brazil haven't won a World Cup on European soil as yet in their history. I'll have to check that. But if that's the case, I think, but my head on the block, I would have to say that Brazil will definitely set the record straight on that one and win this World Cup.
And the nice thing is that you gave us a precursor in that you're not the best predictor. So if anyone is going to take out their money from their pockets using your advice, at least you told them that don't take my advice.
Did you know I put my disclaimer in there already?
Yeah. All right, Coach Andre, we thank you very much for your time at Sokala Duma Radio. And we wish you the best of luck in finding the new coach at SuperSport United. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Sokala Duma
Radio. As always, thanks for lending us your ear. From me, Nkululeko Ngewi, your host, it is goodbye for now. Sokala Duma Radio. Sokala Duma Radio.